Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we'll be talking to one, Terry Hayward. Terry has a Master's of Education and is a faculty member of the Karen Pryor Academy, a KPA certified training partner and a certified professional dog trainer through the Council of Professional Dog Trainers. Additionally, she is also a certified canine separation anxiety trainer, CSAT, and a certified dog behavior consultant with the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, the IAABC. She is a member of the Pet Professional Guild and has written articles on training for Barks Magazine, Pet Business and Grooming Business Magazine, and is the author of three books, A Deaf Dog Joins the Family, co-author, Grooming Without Stress, Safer, Quicker, Happier, and 10 Minute a Day Dog. Terry works with families and their animal companions, presents workshops, travels, and consults, focusing on positive reinforcement interactions and modifying behavior through application in behavior analysis. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Terry Hayward to the show today, who is patiently waiting by. Terry, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us here at Animal Training Academy.
Thanks, Ryan, for that nice introduction. It's nice to talk to you from the other side of the world.
I don't know if I butchered the co-author part, so sorry if I got that wrong. You're a co-author of The Deaf Dog Joins the Family or The Grooming Without Stress?
The Grooming. You're okay. Cool.
Yeah. Just to clarify that, and you are very certified. I think you might compete with Laurie Stevens as the most certified person we've had on this show, which is awesome. And I hope we get an opportunity to talk about that today and why that's important to you and what's motivated you to go through all of those and what your reinforcers are and what your recommendations for others are. As you can see, we haven't even get started and I'm just piling questions on you. And I also am extra grateful because I understand that you're in the process of moving from one extremely amazing sounding location to another.
Yes, it's kind of a round trip because we used to live in the British Virgin Islands. So we've been maybe 13 years in Puerto Rico, more or less, and now we're heading back. So we're excited to reconnect with old friends.
Yeah, and they're both, I've only seen pictures, I haven't been to either, but they both look pretty idyllic locations to base one's life.
Yeah, there's no real winter clothes needed. We'll just leave it there.
Oh, man. I'm sitting in Wellington and we're heading into the middle of autumn, so I'm a little bit jealous of that. But we have things pretty good here in New Zealand. Hey, let's get going, Terry. And can you, for this first part, just take everyone listening back and share with us some stories about when you first got started working with animals and first found out about positive reinforcement?
Yeah, we had adopted a puppy when we were living in Samoa, kind of over your neck of the woods. And I was kind of not sure what to do with this new puppy. And so I started, the internet was more in its infancy, which kind of gives a clue about how long ago that might have been. But I started to try to look for information because there really wasn't any on the island of Samoa where we lived. And I found out about this book called Click to Calm. And I begged my family members to buy it for me and buy me a clicker, which I really didn't know what it was in real life. And I asked them to mail it, and it took probably like 3 weeks to get to me. And I started going through the book, and I was like, wow, this is a really different way to kind of look at things and be able to communicate with animals. And it was kind of really exciting. You know, now when I work with clients, the very first time that that they click and the dog responds the way they do, and you can see the people and the humans light up. So I kind of felt like that for my first time too. And that's kind of what kind of moved me in that direction. And then years later, I was running a rescue on a small island off of the big island of Puerto Rico called Culebra. And at the very last minute, I tried to go to a conference and they said they were full. And then I called and I was like, but please, this is the only time I can come. And I can come because we were renting a small hotel. And they let me come in as an added person. And that was at Best Friends in Utah. And while I was there, some other people that were taking the conference were these things called trainers. And I was like, wow, because my background was education, as you mentioned. So I was like, wow, teaching and animals, this just really seems like a good match. I need to learn more about this. And so I started researching, how does one become a trainer? And I found Karen Pryor Academy, and then the rest is history.
So you're running a rescue off an island in your current location. You lived in Samoa, and you've got to experience dogs and how dogs fit into different cultures and these different places around the world. What has that taught you about being a trainer and kind of working with your clients internationally?
Well, now with the, like we were talking about technology, being the beauty of allowing us to communicate today with the technology that we have, I've been working for several years with clients around the globe, because whether I'm 6 feet apart from them in person or talking with them via Zoom, you know, the training piece is really largely for the loop end of the leash. If we're talking about dog training, it's really for the humans. We're doing coaching and teaching and training on how to appropriately communicate and read body language, recognize, understand, and interpret that observable body language, and then being able to adjust criteria on our plans moving forward to communicate better and set our animals up for success. So, yeah.
And you read Click to Calm and learned from Emma and Ben. And was that because you had it? Was that because the dog you adopted in Samoa had reactivity issues? Were you facing similar challenges?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had, the puppy was being reactive or was reactive with other dogs, with people. And of course, the like many of our clients, the only information that I could find prior to that coming across that book, and this included anecdotal information from friends, even the vet on island, was to get a choke chain, to use aversive methods, spray bottle, you know, all the things that we've heard before. And so, like I mentioned, this was just a whole different thing. I was like, how does this little plastic box, how's this going to work? How is this going to be something totally different than all of this other pile of information, which I really feel kind of icky about. So, and could see was not really helping my puppy. So yeah, it's kind of an exciting starting point.
And how does one go from that to owning a rescue in Puerto Rico?
Well, there's a lot of need here. We have a lot of stray animals. And so I think maybe it was the first day we were living on the island. There was a woman who did a lot of cat rescue, and she immediately sought me out, learned we had pups. And somehow, next thing I knew, I was like the vice president involved in the organization, and I was fostering and rescuing and helping transport to the main island to the vets, and it just kind of snowballed. So, you know, in recent years, I've taken several steps back from rescue, moving full time into training and behavior work. But I think those early pieces really were helpful, you know, in my experience, in seeing all the work that people do, and recognizing too that across the spectrum, there's really more room for help with education and how we can better communicate with animals.
So you just kind of fell into this. You fell into the rescue back then. Was that something you were thinking about getting into when you moved to Puerto Rico, or do you think like that was that kind of little ripple that happened then has led to where you are today? Do you think you might be somewhere completely different if that hadn't happened?
I think it all kinds of mounts up, you know, in terms of like that fork in the road. Years ago, my husband and I had applied to be Peace Corps volunteers, if you're familiar with the American Peace Corps volunteer scenario. At the same time, we'd applied to teach English in South Korea, and both of those opportunities came through at the same time. We chose to be Peace Corps volunteers in Papua New Guinea. Which, you know, you always wonder if something had turned out different. I'm really grateful and happy for the direction we chose, though. You know, that sort of, we already really enjoyed international travel prior to that. But when we were sort of preparing for the Peace Corps, we backpacked around Central South America for a couple months. And then sort of that just fueled our interest in travel. And now, pre-pandemic, but I was at the point where I was getting to combine travel with work a lot, which is really exciting for me. Growing up, I know I'm going off sort of in a different direction, but you said that was okay. We'd always had exchange students, and many of them were students who lived with us for a year each. A couple of them were from Japan. When they got married, we attended their wedding in the stateside, as family members. So one of the opportunities as a trainer was that I got to go and present in Japan, again, colliding the world's travel and, you know, my career allowing me to have awesome chances to do things that I love.
Yeah, not only is it okay to go down rabbit holes, we encourage it on this show, so that's cool. So you went to, that's fantastic. I mean, the amount of your travel is becoming really obvious early on in this episode. One of the places you said you went to was Utah to go to the Best Friends Conference. Who did you go and see there? Was it a number of people, a single person, that kind of was a next turning point, fork in the road, you said, I think, to kind of move your thinking forward?
Yeah, I was going to the conference for animal sheltering or work with rescues. But like you said, I came out of the conference with an idea that, hey, maybe I could be an animal trainer. This sounds really great. And it sounds like something that's sort of right up my alley. And that's when I, again, came home and started researching, well, how does one do that? And as I said, then I stumbled across Karen Pryor and looked into a couple other programs and really just gravitated towards them and loved my experience. Because I was living in Puerto Rico then, yes, I think I was here then, I ended up doing the World Program, which has generally international students. So I was with Terry Ryan in Squim for our workshop portion, but I had classmates from South Korea, Ireland, South Africa, Taiwan, some of them who I've since seen at conferences like Clicker Expo, which is, again, a really fun bonus when we can travel of getting to meet colleagues from all over, doing things that we really enjoy.
And so you've traveled the world, and you've also traveled the world of certifications. You've got your KPA cert, your CTP, your CSAT, IAABC certification. So obviously this is important for you and reinforcing for you. Can you share with everyone what's motivated you to explore all of these different certifications and continue your ongoing education, which a lot of us do, but I don't potentially think we do with so many certifications. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing in any way, shape or form. I think it's freaking awesome. But I'm just curious about what for you has been so reinforcing and motivating to get those letters.
Yeah, well, again, early on, I was sort of diving headfirst in and just was thirsty to learn more. And I thought, okay, when I graduated from Karen Pryor with my certified training partner certification, then I thought, okay, so what's next? And so I just, you know, and really just enjoyed learning in the area that I was now immersing myself in. And then, again, just continuing to find opportunities that would kind of take me in different directions. With the separation anxiety, I knew that that was a lot of work that was done remotely or virtually, and where I, again, live on a small island, I was interested in that aspect, which, like I said, now has led to a point that I was working almost probably 85% virtually prior to the pandemic. So my days didn't change a heck of a lot, with the exception of all travel schedules being canceled. But I think that in our industry, because animal training is largely an unregulated industry, it can be really helpful for people to demonstrate that they're continuing educational opportunities. You know, a lot of certifications require continuing education units, CEUs, in order to maintain them. And so it shows a commitment to continuing to keep up to date with the latest information and to try to continue to be a lifelong learner. You know, like we want our clients to continue to learn. We can also say that we're out there continuing to try to absorb the latest and best information so we can know better / do better.
Do you find that it's important information for your clients when they choose to work with you, that they see you've got all of these numerous certifications?
Yeah, it's a good query, because I don't know that the general public might know quite as much about the different certifications. You know, they see letters, and I think sometimes either recommendation or reputation, or for example, I'll share that I'm a faculty member and teach people who would like to be trainers, or that I've written books. And I think sometimes those are things that clients can relate to, and or word of mouth is really valuable. I think, you know, if they have, I work with a couple of veterinary behaviorists who refer to me. So if people have their confidence and trust in their VB that they're working with, and they've suggested that they reach out to me, that's, you know, key for them. The certifications really was for me personally, and I think for other people who are my colleagues to recognize that I also was invested in making sure that I appropriately learned the information so that then I could impart it.
So I'm super curious. I've just done KPA, and I'm like you, I'm super interested in exploring other certifications for my own development and to help. Because we've got a big audience for this podcast, and with Animal Training Academy, be knowledgeable when people ask those questions, because they ask them all the time. I'm curious to ask someone who's done numerous certifications, if there was a Terry Hayward certification of dog training, like now that you're, I wish you could all see Terry's face right now. if you've learned something from all of the different styles of getting certified, like you have to do this to get this certification, maybe it's more writing based, maybe it's more practical based. Like, what do you think are the important components that make up a good certification?
Yeah, one of the certifications that I've done was it's an independent scenario, so they're not associated with the school, and theirs is very much like a text, a traditional test. And then another one of them is a very long written exam with case studies, which I think can be very valuable because you're needing to explain how you would approach different scenarios so that the people evaluating can understand you, how you would address problems, and that you understand why and how you're going about it in the way that you are. Other certifications involve a in-person component and a training component where you have to demonstrate your training. There's another piece that demonstrates your teaching. And so I think, again, with video now, we can do a lot of that virtually. I'm teaching, like you mentioned, you're doing a workshop or a webinar soon. I have an upcoming workshop, which is going to be online, and we're doing a teaching piece and a training piece. But again, we can do so much virtually, which is really fantastic, especially in these times. So
awesome. And another thing that I wanted to glean from this opportunity that I have with talking with you today is you mentioned that pre-pandemic you were already working virtually. You're already set up to kind of face the challenges that many of us faced when this time last year, the laws of everything change. So I'm curious, having been someone who has worked within the virtual space for quite a while, what do you have to offer people? I know people have kind of been really successful at making that pivot. And as an industry, I feel we've done extremely well. I'm curious if you have anything to offer with regards to what you've found has worked and what you've seen over the last 12 months from people who have had to make this switch.
Yeah, Ken Ramirez started the online live from the ranch, and I think I was maybe the first guest. I was on again later, but the first time we were actually talking about this subject, it was early on, and like you said, people were moving towards virtual learning. And then I did a couple of articles for KPA and one for IABC also on virtual learning. I think, you know, it's made us more cognizant about, you know, looking at lighting, background, like we did our sound check before we started, you know, making sure people know so much more about microphones and headsets. I used to have to say, oh, well, no, I won't be coming to your house. We're going to meet on something called Zoom. Well, now I don't have to say via something called Zoom. Everybody would like roll their eyes at me if I said that now. Everybody knows what Zoom is. I think also being able to, like, as you know, being a KPA graduate, we use TAG Teach, teaching with acoustical guidance. So being able to communicate and really finding ways to guide people when you're not physically in the same space. So I think those are nice qualities and skills that we've been able to continue to further enhance because we had to, but side bonus. So, yeah.
And do you use the clicker when you're doing TAG over Zoom?
I do not. I tend to say with my humans, like, okay, your focus point is hand to home. You know, if I don't want them keeping their hand parked in their tree pouch, I'll say your home position can be, you know, any place except parked in your pouch. It can be on your left shoulder, on your right shoulder, down by your side, touching your thigh, behind your back, small of your back, you know, any of those are open as options. So when I say hand to home, then that's what I'm talking about. Choose one of those positions and place your hand there. So yeah, I don't tend to use a clicker. I also work with a lot of dogs that are deaf. And so I use a visual marker. So just as an aside there.
Yeah, cool. I was just curious about the lag time on live calls and using clickers.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that is, but
yeah, I mean, from my client's perspective, when they're using clickers, as long as everybody's Wi-Fi is functioning, I haven't found any issues with the timing. So that's good.
Awesome. And I'm curious to, because you've kind of got numerous areas of collaboration and certification from numerous organizations, and you've got a focus on behavior analysis, and you're doing separation anxiety, and you're working with deaf dogs and grooming. And thinking back to your story in Samoa, getting a dog, reading Emma Parsons books, I know there's lots of people that listen to this show who might be thinking that they share similarities with young Terry. They've just picked up their first book and they're kind of wondering what direction to take. What is your advice to someone right at the start of their journey? Do they explore behavior analysis? Do they go straight to doing a KPA cert? Where should people get started?
Well, my bias is that KPA as a faculty member is a great program, but my experience was that as well. I think getting some really good foundational information, even going through KPA, I remember that others in my class, we talked about, well, what books should I be reading? And just having that community was helpful in sending me in the right direction. So I think that getting really solid foundation, because you want to understand, what is a marker? What is a reinforcer? What are schedules of reinforcement? What does it mean to change criteria? What is desensitization, counter conditioning, sort of all the basic vocabulary, and then you can expand from there. I always also too suggest that my KPA students then look into as next steps, because just like I did, and like you said, you mentioned as well, oftentimes people want to know, okay, what should I do now? And Dr. Susan Friedman's Living and Learning with Animals is an amazing online course. I was able to be a teacher in training in the backside. I'm observing just now, but every time, once you take it, you're able to pay a small donation and continue to audit the course. And every time you learn something new. Dr. Friedman is an amazing resource, and we're also lucky that she's in our sphere. So I would strongly point people in that direction. I know also IAABC, as we mentioned, has really fabulous resources on so many fronts. I feel like it was 2 years ago now, but I did the IABC conference in Spanish. And, so now I know they're coming out with a lot of resources also in other languages, which is really cool. So I think those are some super spots to start.
And you're presenting at the Lemonade Conference later this year. What's your presentation on?
Yes, I am. It's on non-auditory communication. I work with deaf dogs. Yes.
Awesome. And you've got a book, as we mentioned, on deaf dogs as well. Just before we move on, tell us about your books. A Deaf Dog Joins the Family. I think we can guess why you might have written that one. Grooming Without Stress and your 10-minute a day dog. Can you just briefly tell us about those books and kind of why you wrote them?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so when we adopted a deaf dog and the deaf dog joined our family, which just to quickly back up, we were fostering her. A friend had rescued her. She had 11 puppies. She said, could you help? This dog is really bitey and mouthy and jumpy. And that was how she described her. So I went over with my clicker. And then we really quickly learned that, hey, I think this dog is deaf. And so she said, I really could use your help. Would you consider fostering her? So once all the puppies were adopted, I said yes. And months later, my husband was like, how's that finding a home for this dog thing going? And I was like, well, she's really special because she's deaf, and I really like her, and I want to make sure we find her a great home with like someone that has to be like a positive reinforcement. Well, maybe really like a positive reinforcement trainer, like that would be ideal. And he's like, I see where this is going. So Blanca became a permanent family member, and then I was looking for resources that I could point other people to, and so I decided, well, I should write one. And then I also started a Facebook group called Deaf Dogs Behavior and Training, because I wanted, again, a resource where I knew that there wasn't a lot of anecdotal information as much as database stuff. With the Grooming Without Stress book, my colleague Jay Anders noted that our other co-writer, Anne Francis, had just recently won like a big prestigious grooming award. And Jay said, hey, you know what we should do? We should write a book with Anne. Anne happens to, well, let me back up. Anne is a master groomer. Jay is also a master groomer. Jay is a CTP, Karen Pryor Academy Certified Training Partner, like us. And Anne is also my sister. So we, the three of us, got together and came up with this book. Because again, in the grooming field, there's a lot of information that could be shared. And then I had a friend who was doing a lot of rescue up in the States. And I would, because she's my friend, we would just talk dog stuff. And I decided, you know, I really would like to just have my own thing where stuff is all in one place. And for people to learn or understand that you don't need hours per day, really, if you've only got 10 minutes, which most of us have more than that, because just the amount of time we look at social media, for example, but that you can use it wisely to, you know, sort of navigate the behaviors that you'd want to see more of. And so using your time appropriately and how to start, you know, I don't start with a sit or a shake, and then where to go from there. And so the book has little exercises at the end of each chapter. And so that's how I got where I was at with those three books.
Yeah. And what was your, like, how do you get started writing a book? Were you just like, hey, I'm going to write a book, or were you like already writing, or like kind of how did that happen?
I was doing articles, like I'd done articles, like I said, for KPA and a couple of grooming magazines. But yeah, writing a book is a lot of work. And when I look at some people's books who are like a couple inches thick, whoo, that's big respect there. Because you think you're done. And like, if I look at my books now, I'm like, oh, I really need to rewrite those. I don't have the time right now, but I really would like to just like do a next edition. Because as soon as you hit publish, you know, you all of a sudden think, oh, how did I miss that? Or I would like to change that language, or I do that a little bit differently now. So again, that whole theme of evolving, continuing to learn.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had anyone on the show who said, yeah, running books easy. So you said your sister's a master groomer and a KPA suit?
My sister's not certified KPA. She's not a trainer, but Jay is.
She's a master groomer.
And yes, and certified KPA. Yeah. It was funny because my sister is, like I said, one of the, well, maybe I didn't say, she's one of the top 10 groomers in the state. She's on Groom Team USA, and now she judges. And so one time I was commenting on training on a grooming forum, and I sent a message to this person because I was like, yeah, you know, you're really writing, you know, nice feedback there. And I said, are you a trainer? And she said, no, I'm a groomer, but I really am interested in training and behavior. And then somehow we were talking about the book, and she said, oh yeah, Anne Francis. Yeah. She's, you know, she's so amazing. And I said, yeah, you know, she's actually my sister, 'cause we have different last names from being married. And she's like, wow. So did you ever actually sit down and have dinner with her? And I said, well, pretty much every night growing up. Yep.
That's awesome. Do you do much work in the grooming world now? I mean, it's an area that I feel potentially in our membership is kind of underrepresented. Like we don't get many that I've seen people join who are implementing all of the stuff we talk about on a regular basis within their industry. I'm not sure what your thoughts about how everything's going there, if you have anything you'd like to add, but I'm curious to kind of create ripples as much as we can.
Yeah. I wrote the grooming course for Fear Free, which I obviously highly recommend. I also did a webinar recently with Grisha Stewart, and it's on handling. And bonus, one of the spotlight dog teams that I had on that webinar is the deaf dog too. So you get that overlap. But I think that I was presenting at conferences, groom grooming conferences prior to the pandemic as well. And I think that there's for sure a lot of information that we can kind of continue to impart there. I think it's maybe a little more in its newbie stage in many cases. So it would be fabulous if we could have more groomers joining your listening audience. That would for sure be great. And like you say, grooming, handling, veterinary care, you know, all of that sort of falls under the same umbrella. So, you know, going to the groomers or to the vets doesn't have to be torturous for your pets, especially now where still a lot of the animals are in a drop-off situation where the families maybe can't go inside with them. So anything we can do to train and prepare and, again, antecedent arrangement, set them up for success, you know, it's good. I recently started using a new Dremel and, you know, I'll share that. I have an affiliate link for it. And I told them if I liked it, I would share it. And I do. Because my dog too, Blanca, came from, she was an adult when we got her, when she joined us. You know, she came from the idea of don't touch my paws, stand back. And now she, you know, can relax and lie down and we do a pedicure. And I want that for everybody's dog. Less stressful for people and the animals.
So what is this new Dremel?
It's called Lucky Tail. And I like it because it doesn't have batteries, because I never have batteries in my house when I need them. So it can plug in. It also has less of a vibration and the sound is quieter, again, for deaf dogs, not relevant. But in addition, it has a little light, which can be handy because you can kind of see the quick. I'll send you my link afterwards in case you want to put it in the notes. But yeah, I've been using that, and I actually just, in preparation for our move, sold my now duplicate Dremel. So that is my only and primary one.
Ah, cool. I mean, I'm specifically interested because we've just trained the Dremel with Phoebe. And we just used, I don't even know, standard Dremel, I would say. Whatever that means to you as a listener, it's a standard Dremel in New Zealand. But I was watching my wife working with our daughter and she brought this like super quiet Dremel, which is a baby Dremel that makes like pretty much no sound. And we use that with the dog first as an approximation. Anyway,
nice.
Just wanted to share that with you. So I'm doing something that our audience can't do, and that is watching you on camera right now. And we're talking about all your certifications, you're worldly, you've been to all of these exotic locations. I mean, Papua New Guinea, like I see the birds of paradise being a bird nerd. I know the different species of cassowary that live there, and the New Guinean singing dog, and like all of these undiscovered species and the cultures of that place. Like, I'm just like, what? Like, let's just do an episode on Papua New Guinea, but we're not going to do that. and you've written books, you've done these online trainings, you're traveling. I'm curious to know, as someone who's packed a lot into life, how have you managed all of that stuff in your, what I can only imagine is a very full schedule? Like, what do you have to contribute to those out there who every single dog trainer is might pick up right now who also have very full schedules?
I know some industries maybe aren't flourishing quite the way ours are during these times. I'm currently moving, and I was just saying to my husband this morning, I'm excited once the move is done, because that's going to free up so many hours, just the packing and the logistics alone. I won't even have to think about those anymore. And it's just going to be like, whoa, wait off. So I'll feel like my schedule is lots of room again. But yeah, I think especially working virtually, and I was just talking to a client about this today, and stop me if this is not the direction you meant for me to go here, although I know you encourage a wide berth. She was always working in an office. She was an accountant, and she learned a couple months ago that her working from home is now permanent. And I was sharing that my sister-in-law now works from home as well. And, you know, people kind of figuring out how to make a schedule so that your work doesn't become, somebody said something just recently to me. They said, work from home should really be, I live where I work, but I really like what I do. And, as another example, I had a text from someone today asking if I could work a certain Saturday. I think putting into place boundaries and parameters so that you don't become burnt out or overwhelmed is key. I, for example, prefer to have several long days. Like tonight I go till 7 and I started early, but I'm not going to work on Saturday. I'm going to be packing, but, so I think putting in, you know, setting up your schedule, making sure you've got a routine, like when do you get a chance to walk your dogs and take your dogs to do things you enjoy? Or when do you get a chance to have you time where you go for a run or a walk or a bike ride or whatever that is? And making sure that you, you know, not try and just eat meals on the fly, that you can sometimes sit down, enjoy, not feel guilty if you want to watch some TV and, you know, eat a nice dinner. So making sure that you also book into your schedule not only your virtual consults, but any time for admin type stuff. You know, you might have to send emails or send links, set up new Zoom meetings, follow up, send articles. So putting that into your overall time frame as well, so that you, you know, have time for you, so that you can still keep on helping other people. Is that kind of what you meant, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's following Animal Training Academy at the moment knows that I'm on this mission, and I'm sharing pictures of my schedule on my social media, guided by Veronica Butelli, who's helping me one-on-one deal with that stuff. But as you're saying that, I'm looking, you know, I've done schedules for the last 4 weeks, weekly schedules, and we're going to be working on a master schedule. And but I'm also looking at my cereal bowl sitting on top of my coffee machine, sitting on top of my desk right now, going, oh, that didn't really play out this morning. And it's hard when you've got a one-year-old job, but
that's absolutely.
Hey, this list that you've put together that we want to talk about, and we're going to do that now. But before we do, can you just share with people where they can go to find more information out about your books, get in touch, book a consult, whatever, and look at the other services you offer?
Yep. PositiveAnimalWellness.com is my business. And there's virtual consults tab. There are packages. My books are available 2 out of 3 with Dogwise, but all with Amazon, also through Karen Pryor Academy, the Clicker Store. So yeah, positiveanimalwellness.com, like I said, will get you to me, and then I can send you out from there too.
Awesome. And we will link to that in the show notes. Thanks so much for sharing everything so far, Terry. We love hearing people's behavioral odysseys, we like to call them here on the show. So thank you for sharing that. The other thing we like at Animal Training Academy is ripples. Things, no matter how small or insignificant those things might be, that might be able to do and create positive change in the world. And so I love that when I asked you what you most wanted to talk about, considering your plethora of certifications and experience and worldly travel, and Ryan's paraphrased version, what you said was, how can we incorporate positive reinforcement into our daily life to create more ripples in the world? And I think that you and your thoughts fit perfectly into Animal Training Academy, Terry. Another thing we like to do at ATA is break things down via list. The listeners of the show know that. So you're very kindly offered to share with us Terry Hayward's 5 ways that we can do this, incorporate positive reinforcement into our daily lives to create more ripples in the world. I'm so excited to hear what you're going to say. I know our listeners will be too. So let's get going. What's numero uno?
I feel like that was a big build-up, Ryan.
No pressure.
And opposite to the big build-up was think small, only because I think if we think big, sometimes it feels overwhelming. You know, we think, oh, well, that's just too much. I couldn't possibly do that. So if we just think of one small thing that we could do to move in the direction that we would like to go, you know, whether it's just Google something and start there, you know, and that's just the tiniest tip of the iceberg, so to speak. And if I could move to number 2, because it kind of dovetails with that, unless you have a question.
Well, we like to talk about a lot of things at ATA. If you haven't figured it out from the last 60 seconds of this podcast show, is celebrating approximations. Would you say that what you just suggested is analogous to?
That's my number two.
Ourselves? Is it?
Yes.
Great minds think alike. Look at that.
I know. You'd think that we were like typing notes back and forth, but it's
we're not people.
We're on the same page. Number two was approximations. Yes. So, you know, you think about your small idea. What's one thing I could bite off to kind of get this thing rolling, and then consider approximations, you know, like you said, shaping ourselves. We don't have to go, okay, by next week, I'm going to be to my goal. But maybe we say, you know, by the end of this week, I might have looked up one more thing to do with that. Or, you know, maybe we make spreadsheets. I like spreadsheets. I have many right now to do with my move, color coded, I might add. But, you know, maybe we have small things that we can take off first on our to-do list. So those approximations can help us to move through the process for sure. See if you can guess my next one. I'm just joking.
You guys all should have seen Terry's face when she said that she likes spreadsheets. You got super serious. I like spreadsheets. What is it that you like about spreadsheets so much? Is it something that you recommend to others, or is it just a Terry Hayward thing?
How could I not recommend spreadsheets? They're in Google Docs right now, but I'm an organized gal. I have a label maker. I can't lie. I like to be organized, which is why if I was to like spin my screen around right now so that Ryan could see the boxes and the chaos that I'm surrounded with right now is really unsettling, but I know it will end.
Yeah, because before I was questioning how you look so calm, but you've learned to sit your, but you got a nice backdrop.
This is the only remaining non-chaotic place in our entire apartment. So if I even do this, you can see cardboard boxes.
Oh my God.
I have to keep
the illusion's ruined.
Yep, it's all done.
So number one small thing we can do to move in the direction that we can. I find that this can be challenging for people to, because if you're 30, 40, 50, and your thought process is to think big, that's your thought process because there's reinforcement there for thinking that way. So how can one, and the answer is kind of to approximate your way there, I feel, but what advice do you have to people who are like, okay, that sounds great. What do I do now?
So you mean in terms of finding their next path or what they want to do?
Well, I feel like, you know, back to talking about scheduling and organizing yourself and spreadsheets, Terry's face lights up. There's, and the opposite of being organized is being potentially, I own this, you can think differently if you want, being overwhelmed. Mm. Right. And so what I'm interpreting you're suggesting, and I might be wrong, is that to overcome overwhelm, think smaller.
Yes. And
I love that.
This goes to my number three. She's just like feeding me these intros, which would be, and we talked about this before, but Susan Friedman says, you know, when the line at the door is no longer there, then you can go knocking on doors. So in other words, we want to ignore things that are just, that are not helping the situation and reinforce those that are. So in terms of thinking small, find something small that you can, that you find that's reinforcing, and just try to ignore all that other clutter. So focus on the small thing and then approximate forward whilst trying to not let, as I mentioned earlier, all that other stuff that's not helpful take up real estate in your brain. So really trying to just, you know, narrow down to something that, again, in my move, I'm trying to hark back to Marie Kondo and sparking joy. So find something that's sparking joy and then, you know, run with it. but via small approximations and keeping all of that external stuff that's not really helpful on your focused goal on the sides. Look at that. I think we've tied together 1, 2, and 3 so far. We're good.
So I'm curious. That Susan Freeman idea, concept about, you know, when that line of people down the street dries up, then I'll go work with other people. It's just always on my mind because it's a kind of a opportunity cost evaluation of, do I want to be spending my time here with this person? Are they in that line, or am I ignoring the people in the line and dealing with this situation? And I'm kind of getting the feeling that what you're saying with just the first 3 points is to do what we do with our dogs or our non-human learners with ourselves.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, we have to practice what we preach, so to speak, right?
Why is it so hard? I feel like this is something that I think about a lot as well. And by no means do I say that I'm an expert or good at it with all of the people in my life and with myself sometimes, even though I think I'm approximating myself at getting better at it. But it seems to be hard. There seems to be a chasm between our application.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we have to be very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very specific is not the word I'm seeking, but very intentional and practice to gain fluency, just like we would instruct our clients. You know, it might not come naturally or easily. It might not be from our learning experience, you know, growing up, what was the tool that we would reach most readily for. So we have to be intentional about saying, okay, right, going to take a deep breath, going to choose that one thing, not going to worry about all that other stuff. And if I don't go off track too much and say this leads to 4, which for me was antecedent arrangement. So, you know, create environments that set you up for success. So, you know, just like we said, surround yourself with people who cause you to or help you to think in the manner we're talking about, who, you know, you can have conversations with that are positive, that will, you know, propel you forward in the direction that you want to go.
I like it. I'm still on 3 in my mind. I'm
That's
sorry.
Okay. please go back to 3.
Well, I've it makes me think about something we've been talking about a lot. Once again, we talk about things a lot in the Animal Training Academy, and that is Sarah Owings' rubric of finishing your training session, which specifically talking about working with a non-human learner here, or human learner, and focusing on the things that happen that you like in one small approximation to build on that for next time. And so 3, if I can go back to it, and maybe I'm butchering what it was, but I've written down here, ignore things that are not helping the situation. So someone used the term negativity bias this morning when I was talking to them. Is that a concept that you've come across? Is that a term that you've come across?
Could you clarify what they meant by that?
No. I think what they meant was, and it was only literally only this morning, was that we have a bias to focus on negativity. Mm-hmm. We have a bias to focus on what we did wrong or what isn't, what we don't like.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? Is that your 3, or is that a different thing?
I think it all weaves in together. Like with a new client, oftentimes I'll say, okay, and I'm sure a lot of other people do this too, you know, put all the food for the day, treats, et cetera, everything into a bag. And then when you see the dog doing something that you like, or parrot or cat, you want to use your food to reinforce that behavior. Because probably if we're looking at the whole day, the dog or bear or parrot is doing lots of things that we like. And we only then usually might pay attention when the barking starts, when the squawking begins, when the scratching the inappropriate furniture area begins. So we kind of need to flip our brain around to focusing on all the stuff that is positive, that is things that we want to reinforce. So I think, yes, we have to train ourselves to kind of move in that direction. Because like you say, maybe our default is zero in on, well, I don't like that, versus trying to actually and actively practice finding the things that we do like, and like you say, reinforcing those, because we know that behaviors that are reinforced are repeated.
Right. And we want to set our environments up well to facilitate that happening, which is your number four. So I'm thinking about, as I surround myself with Terry Haywoods and all of these other amazing individuals who are doing amazing things, and who every time I sit down and chat with them, I learn so much. Thinking about, you know, where ATA helps most, and I'm exploring these thoughts and my day-to-day activities at the moment, that they just keep coming to my mind, that what we're doing with our membership is trying to help people become learners. Like, how do you learn? Does that you're nodding your head, does that, because you see yourself train, because I'm taking this from the things that you've decided to add to your list here. You see yourself as someone who works with clients and intentionally works with people to help them become better learners themselves, or is that an intentional part of what you do? Like, you're like, I need to just teach this person how to treat themselves as a learner.
I think that's yes. I have to think about that, but yes, because I think a lot of times when we're at least first working with clients, they're like, here's my dog has problems, can you fix this? And we have to say, okay, let's reframe that first. What would you like them to do instead? And then how do we get there? And currently you have reached out to me because you're not quite sure how to do that. So if we just look at it like that, absolutely a big component is for you to gain skills, knowledge, experience, so you'll have that toolbox going forward, and then be able to, you know, a lot of times too, at the beginning when I'm talking to people about whether or not they want to move forward, I'll explain that this is really an investment in your learning. So yes, it's helping people to, again, gain new experiences, new perspectives, new understanding, so they can then extrapolate that out to whatever new issue they might face in the future.
Rabbit hole? There's one in front of you. Do you want to jump down it?
Go ahead. Let's go.
Well, part of this and something we talk about a lot and within ATA is celebrating approximations and using Sarah's rubric and getting comfortable with, like, not needing to necessarily know the answers, but to know how to learn. Like, just try something and then use that data to take your next approximation. Now, last weekend, Sarah Owings, and this is probably why it's so fresh in my mind, although I always think about this, jumped on a live class with us, and it was for ATA within our membership, and we got Phoebe Dog out, my dog, and we did some live training on camera, and we implemented Sarah's rubric, and all of our members were saying the things they liked, and we're just like changed one small thing for our next session. We only did 5 reps in each session. But Sarah had like such awesome recommendations. Like, straight away I was like, oh my God, I didn't see that. Like, here I am implementing it now, and now we're going to move forward faster. And then after the class, I was like, so what does this mean? Does it mean that, like, is there value for me as a learner in going, let's just find that subject matter expert and get the best recommendations, and then like bypass all of the learning that might have got us there anyway? Or do we allow ourselves to go, hey, look, let's just be a learner, and let's like stumble through that and get the contingency-based learning. And so when you reach that end result, like, we're at the end result, we've got the same end result, but we've got a different learning history behind it.
Well, so here's a question back to you.
Yes.
Let's think about errorless learning. Do we need to have mistakes to learn? I would submit not necessarily. So we don't need to have a lot of pain points. So we could go straight for that expert. We don't need them to spoon feed us the information, but we could glean a lot of their info. And then they may, you know, I mean, we're going to have to go back and do some experiential learning along the way for sure. Because, you know, if we've worked with a family and one person is doing the live training, the rest are sitting on the couch going, "She just told you that. She just said hand to home. Why are you doing, you know?" But then they get up and try it and they're all like kind of a little fumbly too. So watching, you know, watch one, do one, teach one, you know, watching is different than physically enacting the plan. And even further to that, you know, I know that I've heard things like I was even saying in Susan's class, but you know, you hear something and then you're in a different place in your learning. And you might not have been ready to be able to absorb it the same way and incorporate it in the same manner. So, you know, I don't think learning is a, this way is, you know, done. And I was going to say better than another way, but a little bit. Yes, I do. Cause we don't want to necessarily employ aversives. Having said that, I used aversives at recommendations of quote trainers when I was working with my dogs way, way early on. I'm always grateful for the fact that I saw firsthand how terribly our relationship and the behavior deteriorated, but I'm so sorry that it was with an animal who lived in my home. But again, if I had it to repeat, I wouldn't choose to go down that path to hit those learning goals. So, not that you asked, but my fifth thing was continue learning.
And you are a operationalized version of that.
I tried.
So this goes back, this conversation then is taking me back to number one. Right, what is one small thing we can do to move in the direction that we can? And one reason I really enjoyed, like I've implemented it, I did Sarah Owings' CyberSend course, and then I learned from her how to do the rubric, and then I implemented it myself. And one reason I liked it is that I find, and we talked about it in this web class we did last week, in analysis paralysis, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've got this idea that I can go straight to the source, which, you know, which stumbling through business for 5 years and now working with Veronica Battelli, I'm like, oh my God, like why, what?
Right.
Like, seriously, I could have done this the whole time. But I mean, at the same time, we have Animal Training Academy, and Animal Training Academy supports me and my family, and it's a really great business and it's helping lots of people. So like, I'm totally fine with, and I learned stuff that I learned at university in a very different way, practically applying it versus learning it and writing an exam about it.
Yeah.
But where does analysis paralysis fit into this then? What I mean by that is overthinking things. If we want to, let's say, go to the source and find the expert, but we don't know how to access that source, and that source prevents us from taking action, mm-hmm. Is there value then in being like, let's fail forward?
I think that sometimes, just like we wouldn't say with training purely positive or any term like that, because really doesn't exist. You know, we are going to make mistakes. I think when we say set up for success, it's just trying to minimize, you know, the fact that the experience could then be aversive to us learning. And by your face when you're saying, I could have done this years ago, you know, yes. So if we can minimize some of that aversive interaction in our learning process. I mean, if I can learn over here on this side and it's a fabulous, fun, enjoyable, with all the reinforcers possible to me option versus this side, which I'm going to slog through, end up in tears, maybe not really appreciate. I mean, I'm going to choose option A.
Interesting.
Again, I don't...
Sorry, go on.
No, please.
No, I was just thinking back to the last 12 months and training Phoebe's behavior of flopping on her side and me working with the Dremel on her nails. And I just, as an experiment myself, wanted to go through that whole process using the rubric and just kind of doing it. I shared a lot of it on social media, and there was a lot of people are familiar with that journey. But I got to the end, and now Phoebe will flop and we can do all of our nails, and she has a start behavior, and she can opt out, and we know what to do when she opts out, and it's all very beautiful. But I kind of got to the end, and explored that there was three or four Australian trainer Peter Clark says there's more than one road that leads to Rome. Like there's more than one way to train a behavior. And I always have Peter in my sitting on my shoulder saying that to me. And I looked at these different avenues that Phoebe and I took and that we didn't end up using. And I got to the end and we got the Dremel behavior and I was like grateful that I had the learning opportunities that all of these things didn't work. But then I'm also curious, like I probably could have got there faster if I spoke to you or spoke to Laura Monica Torelli or someone who, you know, is my in my mind go-to people to ask these types of behaviors, or Linda Ryan, or you have something to say, go. Say
I do. I think it depends on your learning history too, because maybe the experiences of the not quite working out how you wanted were not absolute failures, because if they were that aversive, you know, you're intending to continue with the process may have just gone extinct. Whereas, and I lost my train of thought, but I had something good on that.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you because I got there in the end because I was okay with just approximating forward or failing forward. And I lost my train of thought too. We've talked each other out of thought.
That's pretty impressive, Ryan.
Never happens. So one was one small thing we can do to move forward. And I'm glad that we did talk ourselves out of thought because I look at the time and how long we've been going. One small thing we can do to move in the direction that we can do. Number two was approximations. What's one thing I can bite off? Number three, ignore things that are not helping the situation. Number four, antecedent arrangement. And number five, continue learning. And we're talking about working with humans, everyone.
Yep.
Which is the same that you do with your non-humans.
Yep.
Hey, thank you so much for all of that, Terry. Sadly, because we both ended that segment ourselves by having brain farts, we're now at the final question for this episode. Could you just take us all into the future and just curious to know, with all of your experience and certifications and involvement in numerous organizations and lens for over in different countries and different areas of our industry, what do you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think more education. You know, I think when we see people, like I said, I did things that I wouldn't do now with the knowledge that I have. So the more we can continue to spread the information that we have, the more we can continue to support and promote continued learning so we can even do better, the better we'll all be. I know that there's sometimes talk about regulation with regard to aversives, and I don't necessarily think it would be an awful thing if some things were less available due to regulations. But again, coupled with the education, because we need people to understand the why, it's not necessarily the only nor best route to behavioral change. And I'm talking about the use of aversives specifically. So, you know, rainbows and unicorns, of course, we all want to just use our plus positive reinforcement with our, like you say, non-human and human learners where possible. And that's not to say that any of us are always perfect at that, but just trying to take those steps to continue to make it happen, to continue to try to, you know, be supportive of each other as we continue to move forward.
So you said we are not perfect, so don't focus on our imperfections. Take the small steps you said, which was your number two. Continue your education, which was your number five. Regulation and setting the environment up for success by making potentially things less available. So you kind of tapped on your list there pretty well. Do yeah. Terry Hayward's list.
With our move, we have a really strict quarantine for 5 days, which means you get a bracelet, you can't leave the house. So in preparation for this, I decided to learn a new skill. So I've kind of tried to go through this list with myself of jumping rope, because it's some exercise I can do when I can't go outside during my quarantine period. So yes, I had to think, okay, I'm not going to be able to just jump like crazy at the beginning. I have to just practice one jump. I have to focus on the fact that I did that jump, not on the fact that I just almost tripped myself on the other 10 jumps. I want to set myself up for success. So, you know, only do my jumping rope when I'm feeling fresh, like had my coffee. I don't drink coffee, but you know what I mean? And then continue learning, like I'm Googling. And then yeah, I went through a lot of rabbit holes with jumping rope. There's a whole other world about there about jump rope. So there you go. Example of exactly what we've been talking about, real life.
I love it. Hey, can you just remind everyone listening where they can go to get in touch and find out more?
Yeah, I would love to continue to connect with people. PositiveAnimalWellness.com is my website, and you can find me there. I'm on Facebook and Instagram too, same names.
Wonderful, and we will, of course, link to all of that in the show notes. Terry, this has been so much fun. So from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and hang out with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's great getting to chat with you today.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much everyone for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.